You're listening to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the DFS Karma Podcast Network. Now here's your host with the most, Jack Caparuccio.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Super Mailbag. Welcome back to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the Karma Media Network. I'm your host, Jack Caparuccio, aka Clinic Cap on Twitter. This is episode number 7 of the No Cap Podcast. Today we're diving into the most important NFL news and news section, the Super Mailbag. Today will be a little different since there's so much redraft content to talk about. If you want to see my starts and sits of the week for fantasy, head over to dfskarma.com to read those articles for free later this week. If you want insights on Thursday Night Football player props from me, that article is already live for free at betkarma.com. If you need dynasty help, feel free to join our Discord at dfskarma.com and you'll get direct access to me and the rest of the experts with our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass Plus. Head over to dfskarma.com to check that out in more detail. Let's get right into it. So as I said, there's a ton of redraft news to go through and takes and things that have happened. So I'm going to try and fly through this as fast as I possibly can without sounding like an insane person. So what happened with Brandon Ayuk this week? He was active. You know, he was injured, he had the hamstring issue, and then there's all these reports coming out that, you know, he needs to learn how to be a pro, this and that, and you get these flashbacks of Dante Pettis when he had a promising year one, and then the next year, he just seemed to vanish from fantasy because he got in Shanahan's doghouse. And I don't think that's the case with Ayuk, because I genuinely think he's the more talented player if you compare the two side by side, but this does have to concern people a little bit. You know, Shanahan has been that type of guy to, if he drafts a guy high and then for whatever reason they get in the doghouse, they just don't see the field again. It's happened before. But with Ayuk, I think this is more the case of his hamstring injury still lingering. I think they don't want to push him too hard and re-injure that. And that's what I really think is happening. I don't necessarily think he's, you know, some kind of unprofessional player or anything like that. He's the most talented wide receiver in that group. Even though Deebo Samuel is great, he has also had problems staying on the field his entire career. So I love Deebo Samuel, but I still think Ayuk is a better receiver. And if this has opened any kind of buy window on Ayuk in your dynasty leagues or redraft leagues, I would go get him, because there are people genuinely panicking about Ayuk because of the draft capital they spent to get him. So I'm going to bet on the talent on this one and go get Ayuk. If he doesn't start seeing things happening by week 4, week 5, then I'll really start to panic. So this just happened. Raheem Mostert is out for the season with a knee injury. Now, Mostert's had trouble staying on the field his entire career, but out for the season is a big deal. You can always track these injuries with our free NFL injury tracker at dfskarma.com. That's what I use to stay up to date on all these injuries, and that's how I found out so fast. But Mostert, out for the season. He's gone. This opens up a lot of carries in the 49ers offense, but I will get to that in more detail later in the show. Jerry Jeudy's out 6 to 8 weeks with a high ankle sprain, which stinks because he was really tearing it up against a good defense. You know, say what you will about the Giants, but the defense is at least above average. And this stinks, honestly. If you have Jeudy, you have to hold him. Don't drop him if you have the room. You know, if there's any kind of window that opened in Dynasty, go get him. Jeudy's a very talented wide receiver and meshes well with Bridgewater. So hopefully he can come back quick from this. And thankfully, this wasn't a more serious injury, because if you watch this happen, it looked like he just broke his ankle in half. Like it looked like a season-ending injury. So thankfully that's not the case. You know, hope he gets back on the field soon. In other news, Ryan Fitzpatrick is on the injured reserve with a hip injury. They say he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks. You know, in his place steps Taylor Heinicke, who had a promising playoff performance and actually looked good in replacement of Fitzpatrick. So I'm not super concerned about the Washington offense, honestly. Like, I think their upside is similar as it was with Fitzpatrick, because Heinicke's an underrated backup and they re-signed him for a reason. So it stinks. Everyone loves Fitzpatrick, obviously. You hate to see it happen, but we're moving on and on to Heinicke. I'm going to talk for a second about Jalen Hurts' big week. I touched on one of the first episodes of the show that I think Jalen Hurts has QB1 overall in his range of outcomes this year, because of that rushing and because I thought he would take some steps forward as a passer with improved options. And obviously it's the Falcons. They're a bad defense. You know, teams are probably going to put up 30 points on them all year long, but we still have to be impressed with this. Jalen Hurts looked really good as a passer. He just looked like a better quarterback. Like, you know, because last year we had concerns about his decision making and his arm and his accuracy and all of this stuff, but he looks significantly better than he did last season. If you have Jalen Hurts, you should be really happy, whether you're in Dynasty or Redraft. This is a message to Matt Nagy. Please bench Andy Dalton. Please. I'm not talking bench him for one play and bring in Justin Fields for a shovel pass at the goal line. No, I'm saying put him on the bench, like, forever, if it's possible. Please do it. We just watched this man get eaten alive by the Rams defense. I don't know what more we need to see out of Andy Dalton and Justin Fields to know that you should be starting Justin Fields. You drafted him high for fantasy. He's obviously got top 10 in his range of outcomes with his rushing and what we've seen on the field so far. And please bench Andy Dalton for Allen Robinson's sake, for David Montgomery's sake, for the sake of Bears fans everywhere. Please bench this guy sooner rather than later. I don't usually talk about offensive linemen or non-skill position players, but Mekhi Becton is out 4 to 5 weeks. And this does matter for Zach Wilson. You know, we saw him get pressured often. He was running around, getting hit. And if you have any kind of investment in that backfield, you know, Michael Carter or Tevin Coleman, whoever it may be, it does hurt them because Becton is a good tackle. So this is concerning, something to watch. Hopefully he comes back sooner rather than later. I'm going to touch on this for just a second, but Ja'Marr Chase, did I not say it on last week's episode? Did I not say it on the episode 3 weeks before that? That Ja'Marr Chase is a talented player, and when he gets it together, he's going to be good for fantasy. He had 20 points in a full PPR format, and he was like the wide receiver 3 on the team. Granted, it's against the Vikings, who have not had a good defense in the last couple years, so take that with whatever grain of salt you want. But like I said, the buy window is shut on Ja'Marr Chase. It's gone. Good luck getting him now. I hope you got him in Dynasty when you had the chance. And even redraft, people see this promise and they see, you know, the stars are lighting up in their eyes and they're not going to trade Ja'Marr Chase now. So I hope you got him when, you know, I advised multiple times in the offseason to get him. If you didn't, maybe hope and he has a bad week or something like that and then you can go get him. But, you know, he really could, frankly, emerge as the wide receiver 1 of this offense. We've seen that chemistry already just in 1 week. So it's nice to see a good player perform well. Rashad Penny with another injury, calf injury. He did not return to the game. Penny's not really a guy who's been on my radar all offseason because, you know, he struggles to stay on the field a lot like Raheem Mostert. You know, he obviously has flashes and has talent, was a first-round pick. But, you know, he's not anything but a desperation play to me at this point. They say it's not serious, but it seems like every other week he's getting nicked up with something else. So if you have him, I'm not really holding on to Penny anywhere, so I think you can drop him. So my last part of this section is the concerning starts for Zeke, Barkley, and Henry, who were all consensus first round picks. You know, to see nearly half the first round picks at running back bust in week 1, it stinks. I get it. You know, you drafted those guys to be your studs and lock 20 points in your lineup every week, but I wouldn't be overly concerned at this point. We talked about the fact last week that Barkley can get off to a slow start. They've talked about limiting his workload. I had said, you know, start him, but it's going to be risky because, you know, you don't have anyone else to really start in his place. What are you going to do? Start Devontae Booker, his backup over him? No, you're probably not going to do that. So, you know, Barkley's concerning, but I do think as the season goes on, he'll get better. I don't love his matchup this week, so I don't like him to bounce back against the Washington football team because they have a phenomenal front defense. And if you can take any rushing unders and any player props, I would be taking them on Barkley this week because I don't expect them on a short week to push him, and especially against that defense. So I would give it another week or two. I think the week after that, his schedule lightens up a little bit. But if you're in a redraft league and you want Barkley and you believe in him this year, now is the time to get him. Or after next week, because if he has 2 bad weeks in a row, the managers are going to be really panicking who have Barkley. As for Zeke, I think this is more of a case of that they game planned him out rather than it is, you know, he's not talented. Zeke was on the field for over 70% of snaps. So I don't think it's that Zeke is washed or anything like that. I just think it's that, you know, we saw the Cowboys offense attack the sidelines. They attacked anything but the middle of the field because they knew that's where the strength of the Bucs defense is. So I think this was on purpose. You know, they didn't really come in the game intending to run the football, as we saw them very limited have rushing attempts. And they planned to pass the ball like 60 times. So the thing to monitor going forward is if in their softer matchups, if they start targeting Zeke in the passing game, if those targets don't come for Zeke, and this is a team that just ends up committing to passing the ball 50 times a game, I don't think they're going to do it that much and that often. But if that does happen, then I'll start being concerned about him. And then Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry had 10 points even in full PPR format. He had a couple catches, which is always nice to see. But really, this comes down to the fact what kept him from an okay day and a great day, which is a touchdown. You know, he got stood up at the goal line twice, which isn't great against Arizona defense, but we got to remember the Arizona defense added a lot of pieces in the offseason. They're going to be a lot better than they were, which is why I always advise against necessarily just plugging in last year's defensive rankings for strength of schedule comparisons. It doesn't always work out like that. You know, defenses change year to year, just like offenses do. So Henry, I mean, I wouldn't be too concerned in my head about him at this point. You obviously draft him high, so you're disappointed, but just hold on there. He'll be fine. He's always been a guy that if he doesn't get that touchdown, it's just kind of an okay day. So you just kind of live with it. So I'm going to briefly go over the waiver wire. There's an article that just went up by Antonio on dfskarma.com. It's his full list of waiver wire claims, and you can look through that. That's a free read, and he has a little bit more detail than I will, and some different guys. We don't always agree on everything, so go ahead and check that out when you get a chance. For the most part, everyone is going to be adding Elijah Mitchell. We know this. I touched on it a little bit. Raheem Mostert's out for the year. I get the enthusiasm attached to this backfield. I did detailed breakdowns on this 49ers backfield and Kyle Shanahan's history producing, you know, fantasy stars when they commit to one guy. But there's a caveat, when they commit to one guy. That hasn't happened since Devontae Freeman back in the Atlanta days and a little bit Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde wasn't a true workhorse, but he was more than what we've seen from Shanahan the last couple years. So I understand the enthusiasm with Mitchell. I get it. He's a high upside guy. I understand that. But I'm going to caution you, if you're going to go out and get Mitchell, for one, be prepared to spend a lot of fab, okay? I tweeted it earlier today that I adjusted my take a little bit. I wasn't really looking to spend a bunch of fab on Mitchell at first because I didn't really know what was going on with Mostert. I don't really know what's going on with Sermon, but since Mostert's out for the year, I'm comfortable going 35 to 40% of my fab budget. If you don't know what a fab budget is, that's just your general point budget. Like you get 100 points to bid on players throughout the season. So 35 to 40% of that would be 35 to 40 points, obviously. If you're a waiver claim person and it's waiver priority, then this would mean burning your number one waiver claim on Elijah Mitchell. I'm fine with it. I understand it. But I'm not going to do what people did last year with Nyheim Hines. If you remember, Nyheim Hines last year was the number one waiver ad because Marlon Mack got hurt and Jonathan Taylor had a good game and Hines did as well. But people went out and said, oh my gosh, I'm going to get Hines. He's explosive. He's fast. He fits this offense great. And then he did good for full PPR leagues the rest of the year, but he was super inconsistent. And that's what I think we're going to see with Mitchell. I like him. I like his speed. But I think it's a Nyheim Hines week one last year where I watched people burn their entire fab, 100 points, all of it gone. And then they couldn't even start Hines the next week. They didn't know when to start him because who knows what the passing game and the script is going to be that week. So I think Mitchell's got a little bit less of that volatility baked in, but just remember, this is a season long game. This is a year long game. All right. So think down the road. Jeff Wilson's going to be coming back off of IR in sometime in November. They don't know exactly when, but you know, mid to late November. When Jeff Wilson comes off IR, he's going to be involved. Trey Sermon, even though he was a healthy scratch this last week, I would fully expect him to be active and involved. He was a third round pick that Kyle Shanahan traded up for and just had to have. So I don't think they're just not going to use him. But the great part about this offense is even if you get 30 to 35% of the snap share for a running back, it's valuable for fantasy, especially in PPR. So, you know, I'm not hating on Elijah Mitchell. I'm not telling you to not go get him, but I'm saying when you do go get him, adjust your expectations. I don't think you're getting a workhorse running back essentially for free. I think you're getting a committee back that will have some high upside weeks. He might win you some weeks, but when everyone's back, it's going to be really hard to guess who to start that week. And also, go grab Trey Sermon if he was dropped because I've seen some people do that. My other claims this week are Juwan Johnson, tight end for the Saints. Now, this is purely a flyer. Probably you have to be deeper than a 10-team league to do this. And, you know, if you're one of those people who had Mike Gesicki and he got you, you know, his turd he laid on the field week one and you need a tight end, I think Johnson's an okay add. You know, just be aware that Troutman's still there. But there have been rumblings that Johnson, this converted wide receiver to tight end, has been flashing all preseason and all camp. So, you know, when you look for breakout tight ends, they have to almost always be athletic. Look at Darren Waller. Look at George Kittle. Those guys are hyper-athletic for the position. So, you know, he's a guy I'm okay with throwing a dart on. I'm not expecting him to be a weekly starter at this point, but, you know, there's worse you could do at tight end. It's a thin landscape. So I hate even bringing this one up, but Mark Ingram. It makes me want to throw up in my mouth, but he had the most opportunity in that backfield. And I get it. They're not going to play the Jags every week. The Jags aren't a very good defense, okay? But with running back being so thin already, you grab the guys that are going to get volume. And the thing with Mark Ingram is most of the guys in your league are probably going to look at him and go, yeah, he's old and washed. I don't want him. And they won't, if they bid on him, they won't bid super high, or they just won't at all. So I'm fine with grabbing Mark Ingram as a depth stash piece. I'm not expecting a ton out of him, but he's a gross insurance policy, basically. Latavius Murray also, I know all the excitement is Tyson Williams. I get it. He looked great when he played. He flashed. He was electric compared to Murray. But also note this. After the second half, after Tyson Williams blew some blocking assignments, we didn't really see him. They shifted to Latavius Murray pretty quickly and just kind of hammered him. So, you know, with the way the Ravens offense is built, even if it's a pure committee, a 50-50 split between Williams and Murray, Murray's going to be valuable. You know, and Murray, I think, is the cheaper option to acquire at this point. So that's the guy I want. That's the guy who I think is going to get goal line work. And Murray can catch passes. We've seen him do it before. It's not like he's just some scrub. He's obviously older. He's had a lot of miles on the tires at this point. But I still think he has something left to give in what's been historically a great rushing offense. So in terms of the Denver Broncos wide receivers, I lean Tim Patrick a little more over KJ Hamler. My initial reaction was KJ Hamler just because of the type of role Jerry Jeudy plays. But I think Tim Patrick is actually the better wide receiver. And I think because he's got the less flashy name, you know, Hamler has a little bit of hype attached to him, little sprinkles of it. I think Patrick will be the cheaper option. So I'm leaning Patrick over Hamler this week. And then my last waiver claim is Cedric Wilson of the Dallas Cowboys. As soon as Michael Gallup went down, which the reports are saying he'll be out 4 to 5 weeks with calf injury, as soon as Gallup went down, Wilson seemed to be the wide receiver 3 on that team. And like I said, you know, it does project to be a more pass-heavy offense. So if you can get your hands on any part of that offense, I would encourage you to. And Wilson is going to be essentially free. And I've been adding him in all of my dynasty leagues because I think he has a chance to flash over the next 4 weeks. And then he could probably become a sell candidate down the road. So this next segment is brand new. And it's been born out of necessity because when I ask people questions on Twitter, like, what do you need to know? It becomes a mix of Dynasty, Redraft, everything in between. So I'm just going to call it the Super Mailbag. There's a mix of Redraft, there's a mix of Dynasty, and there's a lot of questions. I was kind of sick of not being able to get to everyone's questions, so I just decided to take all the questions that were actually real questions in the thread, not just like, why am I in pain because my fantasy team stinks? Like, yeah, dude, I'm in pain too, but I can't answer that. You might have deeper issues that I don't know about. But I decided to just do as many as I can, so we're going to run through these. I'm going to try and give, you know, 30 seconds to a minute explanation for each. Here we go. This first question is from @MichaelMMiskey. He asked, is Robert Woods going to be trash this year with Van Jefferson and DeSean Jackson getting so many snaps? So I think this is a case of week one hype kind of blurring your vision. We have to realize DeSean Jackson is this week one, you know, puff piece hype train, what seems like every season for the last 25 years. I'm not even that old, but it feels like 25 years. I'm not worried about D-Jax. Van Jefferson, obviously, they draft him with a second round pick. They think highly of him. So I would expect him to kind of slot in as that wide receiver 3 once he gets going, honestly. And he looked good with Stafford, but I'm not necessarily looking at him as, you know, a threat to Robert Woods. I am a little bit concerned about Robert Woods, but you also have to realize that the Rams literally came punching out of the gate. They got a turnover. They scored on like the first play, you know, 80-yard bomb from Stafford. So what's the point of relying on your studs, relying on them heavily in a game that you're blowing out a subpar team? It doesn't make any sense. So Woods is one of those guys who's always been a possession wide receiver. You know, he does have some rushing upside to him. They always use him on those jet sweeps and things like that. But I'm really not concerned by him at this point. Woods has always been like a 15-point guy. Consistent when he is going. He's not going to be really a touchdown guy, but although he did like drop, I think he either dropped one or Stafford barely missed him on a end zone target. So I'm not concerned of him at this point. Don't sound the alarm. This next one's from @FFRedraft_King. He asked, what happened with Aaron Jones and Julio Jones yesterday? As in, will AJ Dillon see the same amount of touches and rep volume as he did against New Orleans? And will Julio ever see the target share that we've all been used to? This is a great question because these two are actually tied hand in hand. Both the Packers and the Titans offense woefully unperformed expectations. And everyone's panicking. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I took Davante Adams, wide receiver 1 overall. I took Julio Jones in the second round. I took Aaron Jones first round. What am I going to do? Just relax. It's okay. It's week 1. It's going to be all right. As for Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, I think what happened is the Packers knew they were out of it quick. I mean, they benched Aaron Rodgers for Jordan Love, right? They're not going to leave their stars in. So I think Jones is the case of they knew things got out of hand faster than they wanted, and they don't want to hurt their stars. You know, it's a little bit defeatist, but it looked like they just kind of gave up at a certain point, and they said, we're not going to get back in this game, so we're going to pull them, and we'll put the second stringers in. And I actually like Dillon, and I think Dillon has had some standalone value in his range of outcomes the whole offseason. You know, I think he can be a weekly flex play because I had talked about there is a possibility he just inherits some kind of goal line role, which will be valuable. But I still think Jones will be fine. I wouldn't panic just yet. I think they're going to get back on track as a whole. For the Julio Jones target share question, this is something I talked about earlier in offseason too, where I wasn't necessarily buying the, you know, Julio Jones is still going to be this top 10 fantasy wide receiver. I've had him ranked as a wide receiver too ever since the trade to the Titans. And it's not because I don't like Julio Jones. I'm not saying he's washed, he's old, whatever. Like, yeah, he's been questionable on the injury report since what feels like 2014, but he always plays. And, you know, I think it is because of that target share. You know, when he was in Atlanta with nobody else around, even with Calvin Ridley at times, he had the high target share. But A.J. Brown's going to command targets, and this has been historically up a run-heavy offense, and I think it still will be. It'll be a little more pass-heavy because you have to, because you have Julio Jones. But I don't think we have this top five range of outcomes anymore with Julio, and it's not because of his talent. It's because of his situation, which you do have to take into more account with redraft leagues. Now, I will say that the Titans' offense just looked bad as a whole, so I wouldn't look a whole lot into this yet. You know, it's obviously an easy matchup, and they should have looked better. But we got to remember, it's essentially the first year in a new offense. They lost their offensive coordinator. They have new pieces they're working in. The offensive line is kind of a mess. You know, as we could see, Tannehill was often pressured. So I would just relax on him. I think if you drafted him to be a wide receiver two, he's going to be fine. But if you're going to rely on him as a weekly wide receiver one, you might want to go look, make some kind of trade to upgrade that spot. This next question comes from @FBSillyPhilly. He asks, do I buy low to go all in on the Ridley / Pitts stack? Entire process loved them for lots of potential garbage time, yet the offense couldn't get anything going against a defense I wasn't worried about. So we're going to lump this into the above category of Packers and Titans. The Falcons offense also underperformed. We all expected it to be a smash matchup against the Eagles. And it's not like the Eagles defense is really anything scary. But I think it's another case of, we got to remember, they just installed a brand new offensive system. This is a new offensive coordinator. They're doing things differently now. Matt Ryan's a year older. This was in the range of outcomes that they didn't just mesh day one. You don't just import a whole new system and mesh day one, whether you have veterans there or not. And as far as Pitts goes, I've talked about not loving him as much as consensus. I love the talent. You know, I love the situation. He's got the volume, and he got volume. He got like 8 targets, which for a tight end, you cannot knock that. So I think, you know, if you want to go buy low on Ridley and Pitts, now's the time to do it. I'm not really worried about Ridley. As you know, I've talked about, he is my wide receiver one overall ranked for the season in full PPR. That's what I had him ranked as going into the season. You know, my weekly ranks change because that's more matchup based, but as far as year long goes, he's still there for me. Because that's the type of potential he has. He's going to get the volume. I would give them time to get on track, just like these other offenses. Do not panic, okay? If you're a Ridley and Pitts manager and you paid a premium to get them, do not sell. I repeat, do not sell. Because if you sell right now, you are going to get nothing close to what you had to invest to get them. So don't sell. It's not worth it. Just give it some time. If you go in a couple weeks and Pitt still isn't producing at these numbers you needed him to, then you can think about it. But I will say, you know, I wrote up a whole article on it that Kyle Pitts needs to have the best rookie tight end season of all time ever to pay off at his ADP, which was like fourth and third round in some leagues. So this is the risk you bought into. A lot of people acknowledge this and said, yeah, I know he's risky. He has to do this, this, and this, but his upside is so high that I want him, and that's fine. But this is the type of risk you have to live with a rookie tight end sometimes. They take time. So don't panic. If you truly believe in Pitts, stay the course. This next question is from Fantasy Loser 412. He said, besides the fact that Adams didn't even get me 9 points, J-Rob was utilized wasn't utilized, and I feel I need to pick up a solid running back. It's slim pickings on the waivers, but I'm thinking Tyson, Mitchell, Gainwell in that order. Thoughts? So, yes, besides the fact that Adams didn't give you 9 points, we talked about the Packers offense just looked bad. All right, we'll move on from that. But the J-Rob utilization is really concerning. You know, Urban Meyer just has this infatuation with Carlos Hyde. And we did talk about a little bit that Carlos Hyde is going to be a thorn in the side of James Robinson. You know, James Robinson had like almost 100% snap share for running backs last year, which is unheard of in the modern NFL. So he was never going to be the James Robinson of last year. That, you know, that's in a vacuum. That's a one in a million type of thing to happen. But I think he'll get him going more, and partially because look at what the Jaguars did against what's supposed to be the worst team in the NFL. Look how bad they were. They're going to have to change something. All these reports that Urban Meyer are going to leave, whatever, you know, take that what you will. But they're going to have to do something differently next week because they just got essentially blown out by what was supposed to be, you know, the team locked in to get the number one overall pick. So give it time, but I do agree you probably do need a solid running back. Out of the guys you listed, I would go with Tyson Williams. Even though I said Latavius Murray, you know, I think will ascend to more of a role, I still think Tyson has, you know, the leg up because he knows the playbook more. Hopefully they can fix that blocking thing with him, because if he keeps blowing blocks in pass pro, he's not going to see the field if he's getting Lamar Jackson lit up. And as far as Gainwell goes, I do like him. I've liked him all offseason. I've said I think he's this offense's Nyheim Hines. So, you know, if he's still out there, try to get two of these guys, honestly. You know, Mitchell's obviously, like we talked about, gonna be the high waiver claim, so you might not get him. But if you want to go cheaper, go with Gainwell. This next question is from @sfantasyfb. They ask, should I stack Rodgers, Adams, and Jones for week two? Now, I'm going to assume by Jones, I mean Aaron Jones, so it's a Packers stack. And yes, I am a Lions fan. And the Packers play the Lions next week. And we just watched what the Lions defense gave up, okay? They might be a little bit more improved from last year, but no one expected them to take these leaps and bounds on defense. If there's any game the Packers offense is going to get right, I can promise you it's against the Detroit Lions. So yes, stack them. They have a lollipop matchup on paper. And if they can't perform well against the Lions, then we might have to be hitting the panic button. This next question is from @diehard_dolphin. They asked, is the Titans' O-line / offense really that bad, or was the Cardinals' pass rush that good? Should I try to pick up the Saints' tight end, Juwan Johnson? Or will Troutman steal too many targets when he is really healthy again? So we touched on this. I think that the Titans' offense is, you know, I think the O-line is worse than people have talked about. I really do. But I also think it was more of a case of the Cardinals have gotten better on defense. They invested in it. They brought in J.J. Watt. They spent defensive draft capital on it. So this is a need they knew they needed to address. So, and obviously it looks good. Watt on one side, Chandler Jones on the other with his 5 billion sacks in a game. So I think it's a little bit of both, honestly. And we touched on Juwan Johnson. I think he's honestly the higher upside play of the two because he's more athletic. So I would lean Johnson over Troutman, even when Troutman is healthy, because, you know, we've seen what Troutman did in the preseason. It wasn't anything fabulous. And we know that there is a lack of wide receiving talent right now in New Orleans with Michael Thomas out. So I think both can really exist, especially a guy like Johnson, who is a converted wide receiver. You know, he can play a different role, and he can kind of move around the field more than Troutman. This next question comes from @BradGC66. Should I keep rolling Najee, and should I be looking to sell Eckler? So Najee Harris, I know the stats on paper don't look great. 2.8 yards per carry, wasn't super involved in the passing game, but keep this in mind. He had 100% of the running back snaps and running back carries. All of them. Okay? That does not happen very often. They drafted him to be the guy. They had a bad matchup against Buffalo. Buffalo's been one of the better rushing defenses in the NFL. So this was not the matchup for Najee to just go off, you know, have two touchdowns, whatever it might be. You know, I think this has opened up a little bit of a buy window because there are people panicking on Najee. If somebody's looking to sell in your league, I would buy. You know, I think that these inefficiencies can kind of linger. I think, you know, because the O-line is not great, that these inefficiencies can still be there, but Najee should have the volume to overcome this. We've touched on it. I think he's going to be the type of guy that's locked into 300 plus touches in a season, which is just invaluable in fantasy football. Those guys are hard to find nowadays. He's a true workhorse in terms of snap share, target share, and his rush share. So I would keep rolling him. Just wait. His schedule is getting a lot easier. Over the next 4 weeks, he's got a pretty good matchup with each team. So, you know, if we get a couple more weeks in the season and he hasn't smash played against one of those guys, then we might be talking about a different scenario. And so for Eckler, the weird thing about Eckler is he had a goal line touchdown. And we've talked about it. Eckler never gets goal line work. He had, you know, the red zone rushing work, which he hasn't historically had. And he had zero targets in the passing game, which is mind-blowing because that's his thing, right? But be careful to, you know, panic too hard on him because only one running back got a target in the entire offense. That's Justin Jackson. You know, with the price you paid to get Eckler, I don't think you should sell him. As I had touched on earlier, you don't want to sell low on guys, especially guys you paid a premium for. Just wait. You're not going to get anything in return for Eckler by selling low on him unless somebody comes in with another, you know, round one running back or round two guy plus a player or something like that. Then, yeah, by all means, it depends on your league. But I'm not looking to sell right now. I'm not panicking. You got to remember he is also coming off a late week injury to the hamstring, so they could have just been looking to limit his workload. They could have said, you know, we don't want him in space as much. We're not going to use him in the passing game. Could be something as simple as that. Now, if we get a couple weeks into the season and this offense just doesn't target running backs, then I think you have cause for some serious concern, but I'm not at that point yet. This next question is from @JasonQuinn1992. They asked, is Sermon worth holding on to? Parentheses, I'm thinking yes. If Mostert is out for a little while or drop him for Mitchell. So we talked about it. Mostert's out for the season. Absolutely hold on to Sermon, okay? Even if you don't think he's that good, he's going to have some kind of role in this committee, which is extremely valuable for fantasy. Next question is from @James_SEO03. Time to trade J-Rob question. Looks like his time is done. Like I said, we don't want to trade low, okay? If you think his time is done, that's fine. But wait for him to just like fall in the end zone 1 week, right? Wait for him to have one of those kind of fluky touchdown games where he has two touchdowns on 10 carries and 30 yards. Then get rid of him. Don't sell these guys low. Unless somebody's willing to pay up, don't do it. Because all you're doing is devaluing your fantasy team more and downgrading your talent. So just wait. Unless somebody comes in with some kind of great deal, if you get a J-Rob truther in your league, then that's fine. This next question comes from @TootsiePop6. Gesicki, Troutman, keep? ? That's the whole question, by the way. I have not liked Gesicki the whole offseason. But between those two, I would have to still lean Gesicki because he's probably going to have the highest target share of the two. I don't love it, but you only gave me two options, so that's what I'm picking. This next question is from @JimmyHarding19. Dynasty PPR, I'm giving Stafford and Kyle Pitts for Darren Waller, Zach Wilson, and Terrace Marshall. Good trade, ? So this is a really interesting one because you're moving a guy in Pitts who projects more as like a rebuilding piece. Like obviously he can have relevancy this year, but he's super young. You know, you would see him more on a team that's, you know, quote unquote tanking. And Waller is a win now piece. He just turned 29 years old. He just had a great game. And he's obviously a top two tight end in this league. I'm probably taking the Waller, Wilson, and Terrace Marshall side because one, I actually like Zach Wilson. You know, he did struggle week one, but he's a rookie quarterback. What rookie quarterback doesn't struggle at some point? And Darren Waller is one of those, you know, invaluable pieces for me. I've shown my love for elite tight ends on this show many times. And I actually think, you know, Wilson in a lot of cases can give you enough replacement value production to make this trade even out. And I think Waller will score more points than Pitts this year. I don't think that's a hot take by any means. And I do like the talent of Terrace Marshall. You know, he had an 18% target share week one and Robbie Anderson had 9%. So there could be something happening where even though Anderson re-signed, Terrace Marshall could be emerging as a de facto wide receiver to this offense. And I think he has a higher upside than Robbie Anderson at this point in their careers. So I like that trade a lot, actually. @89Mundy asked, Mark Ingram, David Johnson, Philip Lindsay, start, bench, drop. This is like the holy trinity of mediocrity and grossness, this whole backfield. I think, obviously, you got to start Ingram. You could make a case for starting David Johnson because we saw him get involved in the passing game. But as far as Lindsay goes, you know, we talked about if he doesn't get that early down work, then he's not really that appealing in a bad offense. So I guess start Ingram, bench DJ, drop Lindsay. And that just pains me to say. This next question comes from @IKThump. Yeah, he said, is Sony Michel worth holding on to on the bench? I think he is. You got to remember, he just got to LA, all right? He's coming in a new offense as well. And, you know, like I said, they were ahead in this game. They didn't really need to do anything crazy to beat the Bears. So give him time. He's a cheap option, obviously. And, you know, he could be one of those guys in a week or two if he doesn't do anything. You could drop him. And then when he starts flashing with usage numbers, at least, you can add him back on your roster. This next question comes from @Carrizales J92. They asked, I have Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift. How should I approach this? So who had on their bingo card for fantasy football? Week one, both Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift would be top five fantasy running backs. I certainly didn't, and I'm a Lions fan. I've talked about this before. I think DeAndre Swift has a higher upside in this offense, even though he's the B-back, as Anthony Lynn likes to say. Swift is having that pass-catching role. We saw the dump-offs. We saw how he looks in space. I think he's a better running back. But don't sleep on Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams could have weekly flex appeal, I think. So honestly, it might sound silly, but just keep both of them. You know, Swift, I would be locking into my RB1 or RB2 slot every single week in a full PPR format. And Jamal Williams, I'd be a little bit more careful with. For him, I would look at the matchups they have that week. If Detroit has a good matchup on paper, then, you know, I think he's flex worthy. But we obviously saw Detroit just beat a really good rushing defense. Their offensive line looks much better than people thought it would. So, you know, in 2 weeks, we could assess this and say, you know, Detroit's offensive line and their rushing attack is just better than we thought it would be. That's entirely possible. You know, and I don't think you should discount that. So definitely hold on to both of them. Don't look to move them at this point. And, you know, for right now, play the matchups on Jamal Williams. This next question comes from @Ironman3319. They asked, would you trade Chris Carson for Melvin Gordon and Tyler Boyd half PPR? My short answer to this is I would not. I know Gordon looked great. And he had that 75-yard touchdown run and looked explosive. And he actually recorded the highest speed play on the week, which is mind-blowing because you don't think of Melvin Gordon as some kind of burner. But I'm still keeping Chris Carson. And part of it is because of my concern for Boyd. Boyd is a safer option in that offense in terms of floor, but we just saw Ja'Marr Chase have a mini breakout week one. So there's an opportunity there where Boyd cannot be as relevant as we think. And I've talked about how I think Melvin Gordon is a first 6 weeks of the year kind of player. I think Javonte Williams is going to get more of this offense at some point. And he actually had like 14, 15 carries this week one against a decent Giants rush defense. On paper, before the 75-yard touchdown play, Javonte Williams is actually having a better week than Melvin Gordon. So I would hold off. This feels like somebody trying to sell high on Gordon. And I'm not necessarily in love with Chris Carson. But I think he's going to be more relevant for the rest of the year for your team. This question's from @ASU grad in WA. They asked, how much fab do I spend for Mitchell if I have Sermon? If you have Sermon already, I would honestly spend less. I think you need to stake your claim at one point in this offense. You know, I don't like to overexpose myself to backfields. I'd rather have other backups in other backfields or other pieces of a committee in another backfield, even though this one's super valuable. You know, put a claim out, 20-25% of your fab. If you don't get it, just move on. This next one's from @FireTheCeltics. They asked, I just wanted to let everyone know I am a beast for sitting Allen Robinson starting Deebo Samuel. That move won me the game. So I'm always a fan of people saying, you know, I did this and this won me this week. I feel good about myself. That's awesome. Feel good about your fantasy team. Feel good about when you make a good move. That's great. You know, a lot of people like to ruminate on the bad moves they made and say, oh, you're stupid. Why didn't you do this instead? But, you know, you need to celebrate your wins too. I like this. This next question is from @LinkoCamiTan. They asked, do you think Matt Nagy had money on the Rams last night? I can neither confirm nor deny this, but I can tell you one thing. He was sure insistent on keeping Andy Dalton out there, even though he had no business being on the field against that Rams defense. Next question is from @WokeLonzo. They asked, J-Rob and one of Chark or LaVisca for Sanders, do I do it? And I think this is probably Miles Sanders. I think if you can combine J-Rob and Shark, I would do it. Not LaVisca. I think LaVisca has the higher upside for the rest of the year in this offense. Chark obviously flashed, but we got to remind ourselves it was against the Texans, and they still have a bad defense. So if you can do that and combine the players for, you know, a solid RB2 in Miles Sanders, I would absolutely do that. Next question is from @TheTamaldo. They asked, you think Cortland Sutton is viable with Jerry Jeudy out? He didn't do much yesterday. So here's the thing about Courtland Sutton. I've talked about him as being a value. I like him a lot this year. But he, like Barkley, has been kind of easing back from this knee injury. There are reports in training camp and preseason that, you know, he was working his way back mentally as well as physically. And that does take some time. That does take a mental impact on you if you have a serious injury like that, especially as an NFL player competing at a high level. I do think he's more viable with Judy out because obviously that target share should increase. Obviously somebody's, like I mentioned, like a Tim Patrick or KJ Hamler is going to step more into that Judy role and take some of that. But I think guys like Sutton and Noah Fant are going to see more of this offense coming their way. And remind yourselves that, you know, the Giants have a pretty good cornerback in James Bradbury. He actually rates out as one of the best in the league. So Sutton this week was not the matchup for him to go off if he's going to go off. Give him some time, just like a lot of these other great players. Let him recover, get back up to game speed, everything like that, and have easier matchups coming down the road. I think he's very viable. I think he can give you a lot, like what Kenny Golladay will give the Giants, like these wide receiver two numbers when they're healthy. So hold on to him. You know, just be patient like a lot of these players. This last question comes from @DT_fantasy. It's a little bit like what I talked about earlier, but they asked, why did Justin Herbert have 47 passing attempts and Eckler got zero targets? I know, everyone, it's sad. It stinks. Eckler's supposed to be this pass-catching dynamo. But like I said, I really do think they maybe were trying to limit his workload, trying not to have him pop that hamstring again and make it worse and potentially make it a long-term injury. So that's the best answer I can give you. I'm not inside the building, unfortunately, as many of us aren't out there. But from outside looking in, it looks like they're trying to limit his workload. So just stay the course, stay calm, as many things with week one. That's it for today's show. Make sure to follow me on Twitter @ClinicCap. And if you like the show, be sure to subscribe or follow the show anywhere podcasts can be found so that you never miss an episode. And leave a quick review if you'd be so kind. If you want to directly ask me questions about fantasy football, sports betting, dynasty leagues, or life in general, head over to dfskarma.com and join our free chat room where you can talk to me nearly 24/7, 365. If you want even more fantasy help and access to our proprietary tools, you can get our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass today over at dfskarma.com. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the No Cap Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review anywhere podcasts can be found.